Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to Books Boys, live from the Grand Library, the Dean and PJ.
Guys, keep calm and read your tickets. PJ, we're using the Anna Karenina method here. He's PJ.
Hello there.
I'm the Dean, and we are the Books Boys.
Books.
No, we one and we missed a bit. It's the one and only.
Oh no!
This is the Books Boys show. Get it? Buy it. Books.
Books. Well, I'm very conscious about it because we talked about this. It's always the same.
Cancelled. We've been taken off the air. Look how annoyed Alfred is. Look at him there.
Alfred is very annoyed. He's very vexed.
we were just joking about the intro being always the same, and then we messed it up.
And now we're kind of conscious about it. We had it nailed down. But anyway, I do have a serious question to ask you, Dean. And the first one is this a holiday?
I think it is. What we're doing currently right now, this is what the Yanks would call a vacation, right? This is what's happening.
Literally, yes. Every day is a holiday. And second of all, books. So what's it all about, Dave? Again, I ask you for the...
It's in the toilet paper aisle, right?
I think it's in the toilet paper aisle. I'm not sure. I will interestingly come back to this in one of the books I mentioned, and you see that it all ends in a circle. But I will tell you that maybe books are found in mysterious places.
All right.
I'm going to investigate that.
Well, here we go. It's Books Boys, episode 28, I believe. I've read a fair bit. PJ, do you want to tell us this month's sponsor, and then we'll just get cracking?
All right. The sponsor we have for today is... Lenchen's Secret Service. Germanic fairies fulfill all your wishes, especially for little girls who want to shut up their parents and get their ice cream nonstop. Well, why don't you contact Endes Lenchen's fairies, the Germanic type, and they can get all sorted out for you. You can get it on the internet, the Tintranet, and also inside your heart. But be careful what you wish
internal.
For.
It's internal.
Be careful what you wish for, because as a great sage once said from Ireland, called Oscar Wilde, there are two types of tragedies in life. One is that you don't get what you want, and one is that you get it. So be careful. Lenchen's fairies, Germanic and true.com.
There we go. You can get it there and get that. Guys, while you're on the internet, I don't know if you've heard of this thing, the internet, while you're on there also, go to patreon.com/booksboys. And you can get all of our other shows and things. We did like a lot of playboys. What are we doing at the minute, PJ? We're doing some ancient Greek plays.
Oh, yeah. We're going very Aristophanian. And we reviewed, you and Alex reviewed two, and I read one of them. I believe it is the one and only, the incredible, the spicy, shall I add?
The spicy. Yeah, he was quite spicy. It's Aristophanes on the first few episodes. We have already released The Clouds. The Birds is about to be released. And we're also about to record Lysistrata for the next release.
For you Greek fans, we are going to do a month. What should we just say? I don't know if that's a spoiler, but we are going to record one episode a month. Mm-hmm. Sometimes an extra episode.
Maybe an occasional extra one, yeah, but at least one a month.
But this year is going to be all Greek. So we're really going to analyze the core... four Greek writers, the three tragedians, and the one comic that survived time. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take a semester, I think you can call it. Well, a trimester for each author.
Yeah. So, and just before we do that, we also released another play. We did Historia de una Escalera this month. Just before
Oh.
we got stuck into the Greeks, we did one last Spanish play, so you can check that one out as well.
Also known in Japanese as Kaida no Monogatari. And it's a brilliant play that me and Alex, well, I've read it first, and then when I was in Japan, Alex and I, our mutual friend from Playboys, we actually did see it. The Japanese production is amazing. And then Dean and I just reread it there in Spanish, and it's an amazing play. I love it so much.
Yeah. So you can get all of that stuff. And of course, on booksboys.com, you can find links to that. You can get that our latest music, the 2022 tips. You can buy a Books Boys t-shirt with the Is This a Holiday on it. So do all the things. Do all the things. And on the Books Boys podcast feed, listeners will have noticed some older episodes of Playboys and Dark Place Dreamers are already releasing for free. So you can just get a little taster. And if you want the new stuff, you got to go on Patreon. It's only like $3 or something, £3.
Hot, hot, hot. It's very spicy indeed, guys. So tune in, and it costs you just as much as a, you know, as an aubergine from McDonald's. You know what I mean? That kind of price. It's very affordable.
I always get my aubergines from McDonald's.
Exactly. So it's that kind of pricing. It's ridiculous. It's good content, and well, there's so much in it actually that we start releasing it for free. That's the honest truth. Let's put all the cards on the table.
We actually have more episodes of Playboys than we do of Books Boys now.
Yes, I believe it's we've got, well, I don't know how many, but let's just go Dostoevsky in here and put all the cards on the table. No messing about.
Yeah.
He was a big card player, you know that, dude? It was a man for the drink, man for the gambling, a man for the ladies. He was, then became very religious, so it's an interesting chat. That's
sure.
Another episode. Because we're not talking about Dostoevsky, we're talking about, do you want to go first, or should I?
Sure, I'll go first, because I've got a lot, so we'll break it up. My first two I'm going to do back-to-back.
Well, hold on. I'm going to bet you probably sneaked in a last-minute Balzac or a last-minute Galdós, or if
no.
it's not that... No?
I did sneak in a last-minute book. You're not wrong, but it will surprise you. Actually, I'll mention it now. After all the Cervantes and the Spanish literature and everything, I just wanted a palate cleanser. So I'm about two-thirds of the way through a Harlan Coben book, which is just a crime thriller. It's kind of more of a guilty pleasure. And I'll just mention it briefly at the beginning of next month's episode, once I finished it. But I did sneak in a book. You're right. But I just wanted a palate cleanser, you know? Before, because I have a Dumas lined up for right afterwards, so you're not wrong.
All right, okay. So anyway, that's something to look forward to, more like, is it?
Yeah.
So what about chronology? Well, how did you start your year?
I started off reading The Entre Meses by Cervantes.
Ooh.
Look, I'm going to be honest. It's getting tricky to read this 1600s Spanish literature. It's just, it's a bit tedious, you know? But the Entre Meses are... I have here a collection of eight little sort of 20-page... they're entr'actes, right? So these were performed, in theory, between two acts of a play. So you would go to, like, a bigger play, and these would be little short bits that would be in the middle. The problem is Cervantes's theatre work was considered not actually very good and was not really ever performed. So
hold on a second. A bit of background story. I mean, Lope de Vega... was the playwright of that era, and he was probably very jealous of Cervantes because he was the big playwright who wrote, I think he wrote over 120 plays.
He wrote
a
lot, We'd love to hear some of those someday.
But to be fair, no play ever surpassed Don Quixote in kind of critical and popular appeal. So I think, so that's why I want to know now, are his plays really that bad? Or was he just jealous, or was it a mix? Kind of, how do you feel about it?
I mean, obviously, it's no Don Quixote, but I think they're fine. You know, I'm not going to go through all eight of them, but I'll just give you like one or two kind of as a sample. The one I liked the most was the Entremés del Juez de los Divorcios. So this is, I think there's three or four little instances in these 50, 20 pages.
I think
you
have to translate for the non-Spanish speakers. You know? I think you get the impression.
I sometimes forget that there are non-Spanish speakers listening. So this is it's a divorce judge, right? And he hears a few cases of divorce. And it's just these couples come before him and they say, look, it's usually the wife, but I think once it's the husband. They say, look, I want a divorce. And then they say, you know, why do you want a divorce? And they say, I want to divorce this thing. And he says, well, don't you mean this man? It's like, well, if he was a man, I wouldn't be divorcing him, would I? You know, like, just pull on the insults. Like, you know.
That's pretty good. I like that so far.
So that was quite funny. And there's another one that just complains about like, oh, his impertinences and his sicknesses and everything about him is just wrong. Look at, I have to be married to this anatomy. Like, look at this thing here, you know? So it's kind of, they're meant to be just kind of funny. There's one of them where he says, I want to divorce her for four reasons. But the four reasons are like, they're all the same thing. We don't get on well. The thing that she knows about that I can't mention, the other thing. And in the end, he doesn't really give any reasons, you know? And in the end, the judge says, I tell you what, no one's getting divorced today. I don't grant any of the divorces. And then some musicians come in, some gypsy musicians come in, and they play guitar and sing, and it just ends. It's very weird.
So it's more than absurd, isn't it? I mean,
it's strange, yeah. And actually, I think at least five or six of these eight end with gypsy musicians coming in and they all dance. That's like the very...
Well, you had a sense of humor, right? You know, Sarandis, despite missing, some parts of his body and having been in prison for a few years by pirates, being in financial debt, he still kept his sense of humor. So that's kind of nice.
Just to give you a quick hint of some of the... That was the best one. But to give you a quick hint of one or two of the others... There's one where a girl called Leonarda is someone kind of comes begging, kind of a poor student, and she takes him in, and then her husband kind of comes around, and it's like, why have you got this, you know, man hidden here, and that kind of thing. And I guess you're meant to assume there's adultery going on, but then the guy's so witty that he wins over the husband, and the husband lets him stay, and so he's kind of unwittingly, like, you know, cuckolded himself or whatever. And then there's another one where a guy and two guys are competing for a girl's love, and the dad kind of fairly says, no, you choose, like, this is your call, it's nothing to do with me. And she's like, oh, I'm so embarrassed, I have to choose. And you just, you know, he has to choose, and she chooses the priest over the musician, because they say that musicians are kind of, you know, worthless chaps, essentially. Oh, but they all end with just like, and in come the musicians, and everyone's just like singing and dancing as they, you know, leave the stage. So it's kind
That's a very George R. Martin view. You know, I took a bit of offense with that. You know, the Games of Thrones, I never saw it, but the books, I've read the first book, and it was constantly kind of putting the musicians down, I thought.
Yeah. I don't know if you ever saw the Amanda Show, but they would do skits in a court where at the end of every trial, they would say, bring in the dancing lobsters, and these two guys in like lobster costumes would dance. And it kind of reminded me of that.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe it was influenced by that.
So the second thing I read was more Cervantes. And this one was a gift from our previous Patreon co-host, Mireia, the Novelas Ejemplares. These are kind of, they're about 50 to 60 pages.
So kind of exemplary novelas.
Novels. Yeah, they're just like...
Yeah, so the length of a novella.
And I think he did write more, but my particular collection has three.
I've never read them, but he's done more on that, but because I think it's usually released as in two volumes.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot. Isn't
the point of novelas ejemplares supposed to be that they're novelas and they're supposed to give you a moral lesson? They're like an example of moral code, or
I guess, yeah. I'll be honest. I find my Cervantes this month a bit. The stories are good, but just reading through them was kind of dull, you know? It's difficult to get through this 1600 stuff. But there's three here. There's Rinconete y Cortadillo. That's the most famous one, I think, of all of them.
When you say 16th century, this must have been written, though, at least at the latest, 1500.
I should say 1600, 17th century, but early. So I think, for example,
because
this word is 1613.
So this was written between and Don Quixote volume 1 and volume 2.
Yeah, I think a lot of his work was actually written between those two volumes.
Just to make some clarity for folks. Yeah.
And this one's set in Sevilla, and essentially it's supposed to give us a little bit about people from, you know, these two guys meet up, they're kind of from a different social background, they form a bit of a bond, and they fall in with a kind of Oliver Twistian gang of thieves kind of situation.
Picarate.
Yeah, and it's nice, but it's all, you know, whatever. The second one is, I don't even know how to pronounce, it's the Licenciado Vidriera. So Vidriera being that he's made of glass. Licenciado? How does that translate?
Boy, I'm licensed, but it's not quite the same word.
Yeah, like I don't know how that would work.
Like the crystal licensed. I mean, I'm not even sure what He's trying to get at the...
Ah, okay. Wikipedia says the lawyer of glass.
Right, that's... okay. Yeah, licenciado is like, I think, an old word for a type of lawyer. I'm not sure if it's the same as abogado. So I like the concept. So like a lawyer made of glass. That's already striking my fancy. I like those kind of imageries.
But it's he tries to take a love potion and then he ends up accidentally turning into glass and it, you know, becomes a whole thing. That one was kind of cool, but I feel like the stories in these are really good if I could just pay attention to them, but I'm reading them and I'm just so bored with the old, you know, I don't know what it is. They're just, it's like a lot of people try to read like Dickens or Shakespeare and they get very bored by the style, like Middlemarch.
I do not think you're overdoing it. I feel like there's a time for Dickens, there's a time for, you know, there's a time for some more modern stuff, you know?
No, maybe do that in a different language as well, you know?
Take it easy, Dean. Not, you know, I know you're an Alcibiadean chap, you know? You're a bit like Alcibiades, but like, let's take it easy there. Take it down a notch. Was your next novel, at least?
Well, there was one more I'll just mention quickly within that collection. The, The Jealous Extremaduran, El Celoso Extremeño, also 1613. So I read three of the 12 novelas ejemplares. And this one just about a soldier who goes down, kind of traveling into, I think, Peru in particular, but they also just kind of mention Latin America in general.
Now, the stories sound awesome. That's the thing, as you said, they do sound like, that sounds like all kinds of stuff like I would like to read. I like to give this a try myself.
I'm going to read a sentence from the Wikipedia on this one, just because this is quite, the way they phrased it on the Wikipedia is very funny. So he has this plan. It's spoiled by a younger guy who seduces his wife, Leonara. I think that's the same name as the wife who was being seduced in the entremess as well. So Leonara's up to all sorts of shenanigans. And then he ends up blaming himself when he finds his wife in bed with someone else, right? Which is actually very similar.
Oh,
just ashamed of the way he treated Leonara, he quietly retreats and dies. So he just dies.
Quietly retreats and dies.
So that's brilliant. So I enjoyed the idea of those stories more than I really enjoyed actually having to read through them, to be honest.
Yeah, okay.
And I even read the first one twice to try to take in a bit more. But, it, you know, so I decided I needed a palate cleanser, and PJ, I made a mistake.
What did you read?
I just thought, why don't I read something a bit more fun, a bit more modern, a nice short kind of book, sort of about 250, 280 pages. I made a mistake. I read this particular piece of garbage called The Road by Cormac McCarthy. Winner of the Pulitzer Prize in 2007, apparently. This is the worst book I've read in my life.
Right,
absolute unmitigated trash. The guy's a hack. I'm sorry. I don't think I've ever given such a bad review on this show before in over 2 years of doing it, but this guy's an absolute hack. He's semi-literate. He can't write. There's punctuation missing. There's apostrophes just left out. The dialogue is embedded within the narrative. There's no speech marks. You can't tell when the talking stops or starts. You can't tell who's talking. It's horrendous. I've written down here, dialogue for idiots. I'll give you a sample. Can we wait a while? Okay, but it's getting dark. I know. Okay. They sat on the steps and looked out over the country. Oh, hold on. That bit's not dialogue, but you can't tell because there's no speech marks anywhere. There's no one here, the man said. Okay. Are you still scared? Yes. We're okay. Okay. Like, is this a three-year-old wrote this? Like, this is horrendous.
Well, hold on a second. I don't mind not punctuation. I mean, James Joyce and José Saramago, they do that. So he's obviously trying. I've never read McCarthy, but you know, like some people do like him, especially that he's famous. For those of you who don't know, he's famous as a neo-Western kind of novelist. Stephen King is a big fan of
Bloody Meridian. If you want to know how to write a novel, just go and read Dickens.
But to be fair now, I think on The Road, I hear that it's got bad reviews also because it's completely different to his Western now, supposedly.
Right.
So I can't say anything. I haven't read anything. But I feel like it might have been the wrong book to start.
Bloody Maybe, Meridian. I heard of the Bloody guy, Meridian, you know?
Bloody Meridian, written by McCarthy, is considered by Stephen King to be one of the finest American novels ever written. So it's maybe the guy is...
I withhold my judgment on Stephen King. And also just the American literature in general. But
I like a bit of Stephen King, a bit of early Stephen King. Sometimes he loses me. He's written some stuff, and there's plenty of good American literature. Then you know, I think
I
there's a
know, I
for a
know.
man who's traveled for a man who's traveled around, and especially in literature, the Hispanic literature, Dal seems to have missed out a huge part of the North American continent. I just want to say.
Yeah, no, I joke. I joke because we've interviewed American authors who've been very good, but when I read the kind of modern classics from there, I don't usually like them.
And you just read like three Western novels that you like, so to be fair, you do. Yeah. So anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to.
I was going
to
say about the plot of this book. You know, it's sort of an idea. It's post-apocalyptic, right? There is no what you would call character development, and there is no what you would call world building. So essentially, we just have a snippet of the life of a man and his son who are called the boy and the man, and they are walking along the road, the titular road. And that completes the plot summary, because that's really all that happens. Very little happens in the book. There's a bit of a tragedy at the end that I won't go into, but 90% of it, 90% of it is just they're walking along the road. Maybe they see some people. Are those scary people? Okay, let's hide over here. Good, that threat has gone. And they just like, that's it. And the conversations are really weird and stilted. I can never tell if there's dialogue or not. They don't tell us what happened, like what happened that the world is over. Where are we? What's going on? What's the objective? Nothing is taught. I think this would be a good film, but it was not a good book.
Well, it's been turned into a film.
Oh, has it? Well, there we go. Yeah. Watch the film.
But, well, okay. Yeah, I mean, I still would like to see, like read the first few pages, but... It doesn't sound like it was the best read.
I will give one or two little details. At one point, they stop into the house that the man used to live in. Nothing happens there, but they just pop in, and then they decide they should leave. At another point, they do meet a guy along the road, and they kind of stop him, and then they decide, okay, we'll be mean to him, and we'll take all his things. And then they say, no, we won't. We'll be nice, and we'll let him go. So they let him go. But... the little boy becomes sad. So his mother has already killed herself, and now it's just the boy and his dad. And, you know, at one point, the best moment of the whole book is when the boy kind of says, I want to see my mum. And the dad says, do you mean you want to die? And the son says, yes.
Oh, wow. That's
a powerful moment in the book. The rest of it is nothing. There is a funny moment also where the little boy says to the man, what are our long-term objectives? And that's kind of funny. But apart from that, honestly, it's nothing happens in it. I couldn't really recommend it to anyone, you know?
Did you get a sense of Western feeling, even though it was post-apocalyptic?
Not really, no. I mean, my main notes say semi-literate, talentless hack, and dialogue for idiots. Those are my two main notes from this book.
Oh, Lord.
I don't, honestly, I've been told the guy's good. Maybe I picked the wrong book.
I've been told
no out of five.
Yeah, I've been told myself. I think I have a McCarthy book somewhere. I think all you pretty horses, or all the pretty horses. And someone told me not to start with the road.
But why can't he write? Why doesn't he put speech marks? Why are there no apostrophes in words like don't and won't? I mean, what?
Then hold on a second. I kind of get that, though. I mean, he's experimenting around his language.
Don't do it.
What do you mean?
It's like doing a Picasso. Don't do it. What's wrong with Renoir, you know?
Wow, that's an opinion. Yeah. I like Picasso. I like Joyce, and I like José Saramago. You see, you might not like José Saramago at all, who I've mentioned a few times, you know, on blindness and great novels, anyway, Portuguese. And he is famous for not putting punctuation, and his dialogue is mixed with the text, and everything's kind of put together. So you might not like that at all. It sounds like a Saramago novel, but I love Saramago. So I have different opinions. But you're a man of classic values, and just like you don't, not too fond of Picasso. I mean, why would you even start with an experimental novel like that?
But this got, as you say, it got bad reviews online. I googled Cormac McCarthy terrible. And I got lots of results that said Cormac McCarthy is terrible.
Bloody Meridian is considered a classic, right? I mean,
maybe
we should go with what's considered his best now. That's what I'm saying.
I read reviews about that, and this was recommended to me by like an intelligent, literate person, you know. But it's just the all the reviews were like, why can't he write? Why does he write like a child? What is this, you know? But on the back of it, it says, you know, give this man a Nobel Prize. you know, what's going on?
Okay, so so the modern has clashed with your, I mean, very big contrast, you know, Don Quixote, literally 17th century, and now you're in 2006, I think the book came out, right? Or five, or
Yeah, it won an award in 2007, so I'm guessing it came out in around 06, 07 or something like that, anyway. Yeah. Trash.
Well, unfortunately, anyway, one thing we can learn from this, guys, is maybe start with the book that's considered among the best, you know. In this case, I hear Bloody Meridian is supposed to be really good.
Mm.
Darktow as well, but so not you. Do you think you give him a second chance?
No, or
not
absolutely even? Never.
Okay, that's fair enough.
If someone would like to pay me to read another Cormac McCarthy book, then sign up on Patreon or just send money on PayPal. Booksboys Podcast. I think you can do that, but I'm not going to read one for that's free. Absolutely
for
never.
Ask for a couple of hundreds kind of dollars and pounds.
Yeah, just pay us every penny that you can, and we'll see.
We'll see. Well, anyway, on that note, Dean, let's go for the sushi. Let's go for the cucumber sushi, which was my reference before. For those of you who don't know, the cucumber sushi was invented as a palate cleanser. It's not really a dish per se. It's to be taken between different types of fish sushis. Anyway, I don't know why I mentioned the old fish sushis. I'm vegan, so, but I'm just saying back in Japan, I kind of learned that. And it's time for cucumber sushi, something completely different. Let's talk about the end. But not the end. Let's talk about Michael Ende.
Ah.
The author from Momo. He's back in the show.
And a lot of people were interested in Momo when you reviewed it before. We got a lot of feedback on that.
It is maybe, yeah. So it's been a while, actually. I loved Momo. It was the first Ende book I read. And as you remember, Dean, I was very enthralled with it. It is... was considered for that year, I think I mentioned my favorite three novels. And but I've got to say, Ende really, it's just, it's beautiful. I just love everything about Ende. And I think you would too, Dean. He's experimental to some extent, more with his stories and imagery, I would say. A bit of background information, guys. And a bit with his writing. I have to explain. I want to explain a bit by bit. But first, we started off with El Secreto de Elena. I found this in a secondhand bookshop here in Las Palmas, where I'm living, guys, back in Gran Canaria in the north side, Las Palmas. And, you know, even though I was really enthusiastic seeing it, and I've never heard of this book from Ende, I was slightly reluctant to get it first because it's in Spanish. Not there's anything wrong with that, but I maybe it's because I usually try to read the stories, or I have in the past. I'm more flexible now. In the past, I was trying to read more the books in the original language. So really, when I was in Germany, I was always looking out for Ende. The ironic thing is, I almost never found Ende in Germany. I found one book, which I mentioned in a second, and I just didn't want to pay 20 euros. But I found this.
Yeah. Is this going to be like the Glenn Cooper books that were written in English, but I could only ever find them in Spanish? Is it like that?
Well, it seems because I find Ende a lot here in Gran Canaria. And the thing is, this book I've never heard of. It's called El Secreto de Elena. It's called Lenchen's Geheimnis, or The Secret from Lenchen. And it's actually a very late short story. It's a short story, actually, ironically. I thought it was, what's this, a novel?
I thought it was a novel.
Yeah, but they took a short story. It's got big writing. And to be fair, it's the publication is Barco de Vapor, which is really kind of like the release. I know them from my childhood. They release books for 9-year-olds, 8-year-olds. So it's originally a short story. It did read like a novella. It didn't even read like a short story. It's one of his later tales. A few years before he died, I think he wrote this. Well, Momo was written in the 70s. And it's got beautiful illustrations. It starts off with a girl called Lenchen. And it starts off with the phrase, a bit paraphrasing here, but Lenchen is extremely kind as long as her parents behave well and are obedient to her and do whatever she tells them to do. Unfortunately, this happens not very often.
Oh, no.
And so that's how it begins. And I assume she's about 6 or 7 years old, and it starts off with her asking for more ice cream, and she's asking her mom to clean her shoes. She asks her very politely, and Usually when you're very polite, you get these things.
You should. That's what I learned. If you do it politely, you get the things.
But Daddy says, you know, five ice creams are a bit too much. You hurt your stomach. And Mummy says that, you know, it's time you clean your own shoes. And so she's having a big dilemma, and she decides to go out and find a solution. Now, she's a big believer in solutions. So she goes out looking for a fairy because she's scared that fairies are there to solve problems. And she goes out, finds a police officer, and the police officer, of course, knows where the fairy is. And he tells her to go to Rain Street 13 on the superior floor. So she goes there, and funny enough, the closer she gets, it starts to rain, and it's really raining heavily. And eventually she finds the place. It's a staircase leading up to a door and no room or no building behind it. It's just the doors up in the air. And yeah, she goes there. She's wondering what's going on, but she's kind of taken it by a stride. There's an Alice in Wonderland feeling, in the sense of letting go of logic, obviously. And she opens the door and voila, she opens the door and on the other side is an ocean or a sea. And there's a boat waiting for her. She goes on it and it just magically brings her to the other side. As soon as she arrives on the other side, the ocean and the island disappear and she's in a normal room. And there is a woman there sitting in front of her, and it's midnight. And even though it wasn't midnight when she left, but now it's completely midnight. There it is. It's beautiful pictures, by the way. I love the illustrations by Jindra Chapik. Those are the German illustrations.
That's very nice.
Yeah, I really think that it's beautiful. And I do enjoy these kind of grim fairy tale illustrations.
Mm-hmm.
And the fairies has, she's a woman. And she says, oh, well, you're just a woman. And she says, well, not really. I've got something distinguishing. And it's the fact that she's got 12 fingers. And then she explains that fairies actually look like humans, but they've always got one trait different.
One trait. Like, that's a nice image. I'd like you to send me a photo of that, and maybe a nice photo of you holding the book for our Instagrams.
I shall indeed. Reading this book on the beach a lot, and I just, the sea and everything was beautiful.
Like, Peter, why are you not sending me sexy pictures of you reading on the beach? This would really get us taking off online.
I think you might have a point. Maybe would you like to see more stuff? Well, you know, leave some comments behind and let's just see what happens. You know, let's just see what wishes, you know, get it and your wishes will be fulfilled. So it's midnight, of course, because the fairy says the first wish is always at midnight. And she says, well, would it be a second wish? Well, you can get a second wish, but it will come at a great, great price. And she says, okay, nah, don't worry about it. Look, I want my parents to be obedient to me and do exactly what I tell them to do. Fairy says, oh, I think that sounds like a great idea. Here you go. And she gives her two cubes of sugar.
One for each parent, right?
One for each parent. And then she magically reappears backwards in time. Slightly, she goes back in time a bit, a few hours. And her parents are just making tea. And I think she has a brief, she has brief doubts for the first time in the books, but she goes against them and puts it in the teacup. And what happens? The parents, they drink the tea. And what do you think happens then?
They do everything that she wants, right?
Well, no. Of course, not. What are you talking about? No. She wants her mom, her dad to do something. I think they're watching TV and she says, I want to watch, cartoons. They said, well, you're not watching cartoons. And he immediately goes down half in size. So every time the parents disobey the child, they get reduced by whatever their size is in half. And then the mom is deeply upset and she's like holding her husband, who's half the size now, what he was before. And then she screams at the girl.
Less useful to her.
Yeah, and like, well, yes, it's a bit of a challenge. and she disobeys her child, and then she also turns the same size. And then again, they're really upset, and then they kind of disobey three times, and they always go a half in size, and they're really terrified at the end because the girl explains to her, look, the more you disobey me, then this will happen. And And here's where it gets interesting. So the girl has what she wants, and the parents are obeying her, but she starts to realize maybe not so much fun. You know, no one's cooking, mm-hmm. no one's cleaning, no one's there to wrap her up in bed. And
she should have thought about that.
She should have thought about that. And things go a bit dark then, because she starts begging her parents to just not disobey her. But they kind
if only
of...
children were more intelligent and thought ahead.
And the thing is, they accidentally disobey her sometimes, you know, just because they kind of lose it. They're kind of panicking. Say, no, stop it now. Get me out of here. She puts them in a matchbox at one point. I think they're feeling a bit, you know, a bit degraded, as you would if you're putting them in a matchbox, right? And they don't have clothes anymore. They're wearing napkins, I think, as dresses. And like the dad's wearing a napkin dress. So, you're not in your best self. And you're disobeying, and they turn really small, and she's terrified. So she goes out to seek the fairy for the second wish, which comes at a great cost. And okay. I'll leave it there.
Sounds intriguing, though.
The interesting thing is, it's difficult to find a fairy this time, and she has to go to Wind Street, and it's more of a challenge. So the second wish becomes more of an adventure.
Okay.
Essentially, it is written for a younger author. But I just want to say, Michael Ende always said he's not a children's author. He's just a writer for everyone between the age of, I think he said that between the age of 88 and 4 or something like that. He once had a saying.
Fair.
So it's really, I suppose you can read it as a children's book. It's marketed as a children's book with huge typing and pictures. I love Ende because he talks about, I suppose, a universal kind of themes. And it's about a disobedient child, and there's a grim-esque kind of nature to it more than a Momo. It's still a very enjoyable short story. I think you can get it in a collection of short stories as well, translated, as well as the children's edition, which I think is also being translated into English. So nice and easy. Short story, Lenthian Secrets by my...
And, you know, people like it when we do books that are also available in English, actually.
Exactly, yeah. It's not just about the,
I hear that rumor, you know.
Exactly.
Sometimes they are not available in English and people get very sad.
We often review things that are not available in other tongues. That's right.
I'm going to come back with another book or two, but first, if you've got a few seconds, I'm going to just pitch our Patreon again. Where's my funky ad?
Get down funky.
The facts that will be presented are true.
Yes, PJ.
Hello there.
Now, PJ, what have we learned about Shakespeare?
He's in the heart attack!
Hello.
Dark Place Robert and Playboy Alex.
Doing all right. Glad to be here again.
So I've given you those nicknames. I'm not a fan of that one. Well, that's where people will know you from. That's why
you're going to know me from that one, but let's carry on anyway.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Join us for Shakespeare written. Spanish plays and poetry, rock star interviews, film reviews, Dark Place Dreamers, and more. Patreon.com/booksboys. And now also with Greek plays.
Funky, get down to it.
Is this a holiday?
It's always a holiday. That's but what I say. That's a great quote from JC. I'm not talking about Jesus Christ. It was also a strong figure, but I'm talking about Julius Caesar. So
guys,
get down.
Is this a holiday? Read the Anna Karenina method. Keep calm and read your Dickens. Doc Lit. Marianella drama and all of the other
there'll be more key terms popping up. Don't worry about it.
Los chicos de los libros. And remember, never listen to our old rivals, the literature lads. They are imposters. They are not us.
They look very similar, but there's something odd about them. Shadowy.
PJ, what I read, the book I read next has a story to it. So this is by our good friend, J. Reader Archuleta. This is the last of the books he sent us, Rio Sonora. Mm. Yeah. I read about... Now, this is short, right? So we've read three books by him. The first was short stories.
Yeah.
The second was short stories that kind of connected in a narrative, and then this one is just a novel, okay? So there's a kind of backwards progression, because we read them in reverse order, actually. But
sorry, hold on a second. So is this the first book that came out?
I believe this is the first. First or second, but the short stories were the newest one, I think, that we interviewed him about. Nice. Again, this is a Texan chap close to the Mexican border, and we have El Paso Red Flame Gas Station and other stories, The Best Good Horse, and this one, Rio Sonora, a story of the Arizona Rangers. Now, the story to this is that this book was stolen. I have it here, so you can see that I have recovered it. But this book, along with a number of my other possessions, were actually stolen when I was about halfway or two-thirds of the way through the book. And luckily, the police actually were able to recover it, and I have it back, and I was able to finish it. So,
oh, guys, that's nice. Yeah, that's very lucky.
As you'll see, it's signed in there, you know.
Well, yeah, you don't want to lose that. I mean, and you actually read three books of this. Now, that's very nice. And he was a lovely person to interview. I really enjoyed that interview there.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if you remember, but one of the short stories that we mentioned just briefly had a chap called Owen, who was, they were in a kind of children's home kind of place, and they're very religious run, and he was sticking up for a boy who was being bullied. Well, the prologue of this novel is that short story again, because this novel is about that chap Owen when he grew up, and he grew up to be an Arizona Ranger. And this is, so he's a lawman, and this is his story. I'm not going to go into it in any great depth. I think it's a fun one that I would just recommend people read. But this is the first of the books this month that I genuinely really liked. So I was very glad to get it recovered.
And that's a big compliment, because you got McCarthy there, another really modern classic Western author, and you much preferred this book, Sonora. So that's good. It's high compliment.
I definitely did. So in the beginning, we don't know that it's Owen. They just refer to him in the opening kind of scene as the lawman. And he's questioning this chap, Pete. And Pete says, how long do you reckon it'll be? And he says, about an hour or two, give or take, because that's their journey to the prison, right? And he says, no, I don't mean that. I mean, how long will it be before they hang me? And he says, well, I don't know, Pete. So this guy's in for a bad time. And Pete says, well, what if I give you some information? And he says, return this, there's a gift that I want to give to my daughter, though it's questionable whether it really is his daughter, and I'll give you some information about another crime that was done. And then that kind of sets up the novel as the Ranger's going to look into this crime. And there's a backdrop of the fact that they're trying to make Arizona like a proper official American state at this time. And they're going to do away with the Arizona Rangers and make it like a sheriff and a proper professional police department. Whereas these are like old school, almost semi-lawless kind of Rangers at this time. And they're trying to modernize and democratize and get rid of it. And, you know, this guy's old school.
Yeah.
And he's turned down lots of promotions because, you know, he doesn't want to work the desk or whatever. He just likes riding around on his horse, you know.
As he would, yeah.
Yeah.
My lovely, 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 my lovely horse. That's another Patreon special there. Yeah, I think we got that on Patreon, right?
I think that's it. Yeah, that's on the 2022 tapes as well. I know that Playboy Alex just loves that.
he does. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was very excited.
Basically, Pete says, you know, you might remember about this case. This lady was killed, and you know, the gang that I knew were part of it. I was there, but basically it was a woman and her little daughter. And he says, I promise you that I have nothing to do with the daughter, but basically they raped and killed the woman and her daughter, and her, like, I think the girl's 10 or something, like her young child. So it's really, this book does deal with some very severe crimes.
Yeah.
And of course, the lawman is, you know, disgusted by this. He kind of gets the confession from Pete. Doesn't promise him anything. Doesn't promise that it'll help his sentence or anything. Just says it, you know, it might help. And then off he goes to deal with this. And there's old man Mike Duff. And it turns out that, you know, this woman and daughter were supposed to be his wife and daughter, but then they say actually when they do the kind of exams, the post-mortem or whatever, this woman's never given birth, that wasn't her daughter, and the daughter has records of several other broken bones from the past that weren't from that incident, and was it the dad, what was going on, and so this opens up like more questions. And then there's another kind of bit. There's a chap, Silvestre Silva, and he's a president of the Banco del Mar. And they're getting involved, you know, these rich banker villainous types, they're getting involved in some kind of shady dealings as well. So there's all that kind of stuff going on. There's a bit with a firing squad that just kill a guy. And, all, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening in the book, to be honest. And I don't really want to, like, kind of give too many spoilers or ruin anything. Yeah. I'm very, very happy that there is a nice love story at the end when he just meets this lovely, beautiful, glamorous lady and kind of falls in love with her. But there's lots of bits and pieces going on along the way. And I think this one is certainly better than I liked it more than the previous three books I've reviewed this month.
Well, that's high saying, talk about Cervantes and McCarthy. So, high compliments.
Well, Cervantes, maybe. McCarthy, I think, is a hack.
We can only look forward to the fourth book, right? Because so far he's released three books.
We've now reviewed all three, so I'll be keeping an eye out for any.
Wow, I'd love to read this.
I just want to give you the sense of just this range. You know, he's trying to. They're avoiding this new incoming technology and the changes to the department of the state, and he just wants to ride around on his horse and kind of. But he's a good man. He wants to do the right thing. He wants to catch the bad guys. You know, very noble.
It's a relatively popular theme in more modern Western novels. It's the decline of the Western civilization, more like the heyday, and like holding on to it. And that's why I recommended to him back in an interview, John Williams' Butcher's Crossing. John Williams wrote Stoner, but it became popular again after a re-release. So he's a 60s author, 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Butcher's Crossing is actually about that. And it's kind of like the heyday's gone. It's not really valuable anymore. What do you do? And they're kind of like, but they haven't modernized yet enough. You know, haven't had a chance yet living out so back in the countryside. So I find it an interesting theme. It's not so heroic. It's not so Hollywood-esque as some other, you know, Western themes are. So I like that when it's like, it's declining. You know, it's changing. Yeah, want to be part of the change, not really kind of.
Well, very thankful to Mr. Archuleta again for sending those through.
Thanks very much, appreciate that. Three books is very generous, first of all, and
you
genuinely enjoyed it, so I look forward to reading them myself. And the only reason why I haven't read them is because I'm just geographically not there, but
we're gonna meet up and send so many of the books over to yourself at some point.
Hopefully I'll be reviewing him then, so we can review him a fourth time.
I'll do a quick break here to just mention what I've been up to this month. So, other than having my things stolen, I've been back at the Mexican dancing, doing some polkas. I've been doing an evening class on women in Greek mythology. And I have also been doing a bread making class, making Irish soda bread, wheaten breads, a beautiful focaccia bread. So I've been keeping myself busy, PJ, because you just don't want any damn free time in your schedule, you know.
But anyway, a shout out to all, the bakers in the world. Mm. I used to bake myself a lot of bread during COVID lockdown, actually. So I know that was very relaxing. I also wanted to mention I myself have been mainly surfing a lot lately. So I've been back in Las Palmas, and. And one of the reasons was that Lisa and I, we just wanted to learn how to surf properly because we never really had a course. So we had a few lessons and we're really learning it neatly, like properly. So it's very nice to be actually learning how to stand and ride the waves. And we'll say it's very meditative and relaxing. Plus, as well as that, we'll be doing more yoga and dancing and, you know, experimenting around with vegan cuisine and juices and also hiking around the place, exploring the north side of Gran Canaria, which I don't know too well, to be honest. I've sent you some videos and photos.
Mm-hmm. Having a fun time. Oh, that sounds like you're having a good time. That's great. And PJ, I should mention to you, just while it's popped into my head, Playboy Alex and I also went down to a certain jazz bar and we saw Mr. Kieron Burke doing some singing. So that was
one and only. Talk about the parents. That's my co-creator himself, my dad.
On episode 5,
shout out to him. Well, yeah, he's in episode 5 reviewing his because he's also, as I said, got a great novel. Hopefully, it's going to be released soon. I love it. Read it twice or thrice now. It's amazing.
So we did that. And, you know, coming up, I'm actually going to be going to the theater a lot in February. So I'll mention this on next month's episode. But I'll be seeing at least 2 Shakespeare plays and maybe 1 or 2 more plays in February and early March. So
love a bit of Shakespeare. Shakespeare, so good. You know, Shakespeare came into my mind the other day. We're digressing a bit, but, I just want to mention once again, I suppose it sounds like I'm advertising Patreon because I love Shakespeare coming out, but I do want to mention the fact that, always revealing Shakespeare and even thinking about the themes, it's just so timeless. If you look at the new novels and films, it comes out, even new plays, it's like, yeah, but, you know, that's not as radical as Hamlet or Macbeth. I feel like that's crazy enough. I mean, could you get more crazy? Could you get more violent than Hamlet and more existentialist could you get more violent than Macbeth? Sorry, or more existentialist than Hamlet, for example. Just those two plays alone. Or could you get as surreal, I suppose, as Midsummer Night's Dream? I mean, that's powerful stuff right there. But then it was amazing that
I think I subscribe to the philosophical theory that you can't tell if something is good in its own time. You know, it has to have been remembered and survived. Yeah. That's not to say that, you know, sadly, I'm sure lots of good things were lost. Like we're doing Greek plays and only a few authors have survived. I'm sure a lot of good stuff was lost as well. But I'm just saying, it needs to have that longevity and to survive for so long and before you can really say this is a great work. You know,
I think so, right? Yeah. And some of it has not aged so well. You know what I mean? You see it sometimes with books that have or films that are a hype, like just a few years ago, and now it's like, that's like, you know, I wouldn't watch it again now or read it again now. But Shakespeare just feels so modern, especially that one Macbeth. I just found like when I read Macbeth the first time, I thought this could have been written like this year. That's what I thought when I read it. This could have been written this year. It's so fun and so radical. It's so the language is different, but then for me, that's just like, okay, maybe it's just a different country. You know, like maybe it might as well have been Sweden or some other, you know, kind of Saxon country and different acts and whatever, but it just feels so modern.
But that's how you know it's good, you know? So do you have any more books to review or shall I crack on?
Well, I have the ultimate book to review. Should I get to it?
Let's have one, yeah.
May I introduce you, Dean, what I consider one of the best books ever written.
Oh, wow.
That's a high praise.
Michael Ende again.
It's Michael Ende again, and this time his classic magnum opus, The Neverending Story.
Ah.
Now,
this
have you
is
seen the
full
film?
Novel. I have heard of it, but I've not actually seen it. I must
this
confess.
This is a full novel. Now, I've seen the film once or twice, and I like the film. However, needless to say, the novel surpasses the film so much. And for two reasons. And by the way, this is very, you know, authors are not usually happy about their adaptations in film. Poor Michael Ende was so upset about the adaptation that he's filed a lawsuit against the producers. Which I thought was a bit over the top.
A little bit much, right?
Because, I mean, he's still got the money, I feel like. You know, I mean, paying the rent, I don't feel bad. He really was. He put a lawsuit against them and he lost it. I thought
it's like you put in your lawsuit. Cool. So are you going to return all the money that you made from it then? You know?
Yeah, because I mean, he did make a lot of money. Probably. It might not have actually been. Probably. I mean, like, yeah, became a big hit. Now, but I see two reasons why. First of all, this is one of the most metaphysical, metaphorical, most profound novels I've ever read in my life. That's one thing to say. But
better than Discovery of Heaven.
Oh, I love Discovery of Heaven for you
really?
Guys.
Really, PJ, you should tell us about that sometime.
The inaugural 2.5 episodes review.
You spoke a 30-minute monologue uninterrupted on one episode.
I think I saw you yawn at one point, which, to be fair, you rarely do. So, like, I loved Discovery of Heaven. Now, similar as in Discovery of Heaven, I still think about the discovery of heaven and the themes and the story. And even though, okay, it's not been that long since I finished this book, but even while reading it, and even now, it's, God, my God, I'm not sure if that will ever go away, like Momo. So that's why I love about Momo. I still think about Momo. I still think about Discovery of Heaven. These are books whose themes always come back to me.
This is how I feel about Dickens. I imagine that I'm walking around in Victorian London.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, okay, but like those things stay. And that's what's really precious. Like a story that disappears, I'm not, that's okay. Like, it's okay to be entertaining, but I feel like I want to be touched profoundly, you know?
Yeah.
And now I want to give a bit of, the danger is I might go on again half an hour in the monologue. So I will keep it nevertheless short, but impactful, I hope. So give a bit of more background story about Michael Ende. His dad, Edgar Ende, was a surrealist painter in the late 20s and 30s. So those who don't know, it's a whole movement related to Freudian psychoanalysis and modernist movement, where they really painted about a lot of sexual themes and just themes that are very dreamlike, you know,
ooh la la,
that you would expect in a dream. And Edgar Ende really wasn't one of the more sexual kind of orientated ones. It really just focused on the dreams. And Edgar Ende, being German, doing this in the 30s, his paintings were banned by the Nazi regime, and eventually they were all burnt up in flames because of the bomb raids where they were living. So pretty dramatic. And really what Ende does, it's clear in Momo a bit, but it's really clear in the Neverending Story, that he really does admire his dad, what he's done. And one thing is clear, that what his dad painted, his son, Michael, wrote. So he didn't paint what his dad painted. He just wrote these surrealistic themes. So you got, it's full of surreal imagery, a bit in Momo. But the Neverending Story is longer, and it's more content. It's set in, I suppose you call it low fantasy in the end, because it's the reality, and then there is this other world called Fantasia, but they're very loosely linked. They are linked.
Okay.
It's not. Well. And it starts,
I prefer low fantasy, as you know.
Oh, no, no. But now, anyway, so that's the background story, that this is someone who admired his dad's paintings, and he painted dreams. So in some sense, Edgar Ende painted dreams, Michael Ende wrote the dreams down. And this book, as in the film, it begins with a young lad, storming into a bookshop. And he's panting away. Yeah, he's panting away, and he's just trying to hide because he's being bullied. And to be fair, I'm going to say this, I think the film does a good job in portraying the first half of the book. So I'll get to that in a second. Anyway, if you know the film, you know all of the first half of the story that I'm saying. So the boy is called Bastian Balthasar Books, so a lot of BBBs. I think that's coincidental. There's something about, his surname is Books, B-U-X.
Oh, his surname, okay.
His surname is Books. And the salesperson there is called Karl Konrad Koriander, love K's. And he said, well, it's an interesting name. And they have a chat. But he kind of gets tired of the boy and tells him to go now. You know, that's, yeah, it's not very fantastic. It's just kind of, all right, this boy is being bullied and it's raining outside. But Bastian sees a book, and there's something about the book. There's an image there of two snakes biting each other's tail, just as you might see here very vaguely. One snail is biting the other tail, and while the other snail bites the other tail. And it's called The Neverending Story, Die Unendliche Geschichte. And he just decides to steal the book, which he never done before. He steals the book, he can't help it, and he escapes, and he hides up. He goes to school, it's school time, but he doesn't go to class. He just runs up to the attic, and he begins reading the book. And he really decides that he's never, ever going to go back to life. He's just going to stay here until he's finished reading that book, and because he doesn't think life has a future anymore. It turns out his mom has passed away, and his dad is distant to him, and he's being bullied. He's a bit rotund. He's a bit pale. He's not good at sports.
Just brief public service announcement. We do recommend getting your hands on as many books as possible. We don't necessarily endorse theft.
Not necessarily, no. So do pay your local book center. And right, anyway, I'm digressing a bit. Not digressing, but I feel there's so much content. I want to go endlessly about it, although it is called the Neverending Story. He reads a story about Atreyu, who is sent from, he's sent to save Phantasia. So it's a world that's endless. It's an endless world where all fantastic creatures live. Very surreal imagery. So here's where the surreal imagery begins. And what I love about this, I love the style. There's two stories you can see when it's changed, because the real life story is in red ink. The Phantasia is green ink. So it does start switching between them.
Yes. Now, does that get, you know, is that hard on the eyes or is it fine?
No, it's fine. It's just clear red ink, and one is green. It's just instead of black. No, didn't disturb me. It's very easy to read. It's and it's not very it's not terribly crazy experimental with the language as well. It uses very fine vocabulary, and he does go a bit medieval kind of esque in the Phantasia, but nothing too crazy experimental like with McCarthy. Well, Phantasia is this world. Basically, it begins with a couple of creatures meeting up, and they talk about the nothing. That's nichts. Sorry if I'm getting the translation wrong. It might be different in English. But in German, it's just das Nichts. It's literally nothingness is creeping upon the kingdom and eating up the world. And when you look into nothingness, you are blinded because you cannot even see nothingness. You're looking into nothingness. It's already a great concept, because turning into film is a problem here, because they're looking at nothing. And the film is just like a black smoke, but they're looking at nothing. They're actually blinded. So for me, it's more like a white image, where it's like you can't, it's like the sun. Phantasia is disappearing from all corners, even though it's supposed to be endless. That's ironically not true. There's a juxtaposition here. Ah. It's kind of also disappearing. And the ruler of Phantasia is the Kinderliche Kaiserin, the child Caesar, except she's a girl. So like the child empress. And she rules not by demanding. She rules by trust. Everyone trusts her, and she just is. She doesn't ever interfere. So there's an interesting kind of Buddhist concept as well. He's a bit influenced by Buddhism and Taoism as well. That's what I like about Ente. And she got sex. She accepts it as well. She accepts. So it's interesting. She's not going ever against the dark force, but is the nothingness. Supposedly it's dark. But she does send Atreyu. She said there's one child who can save the world, our world, and that's Atreyu. And then she sends off Atreyu. She sends off a doctor to look for Atreyu, and Atreyu then gets the medal. He gets a medal from the Empress, which will defend him, basically. So, and then he goes up. Then he goes to find the reason. And I won't to describe the whole story would take ages, because it does not use the Anacharsis method, and I appreciate that about him. Really, there is great.
It's all
story
content. It's not filler. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big saga. This novel, and I'm not going to go into detail because it would take too long, and I think it's real treat what happens. But let's just say that I love the concept that he's trying to find a solution, and he has no idea what to do.
PJ, so you're going to disappoint the fans of the Discovery of Heaven method, which is they're looking for a longer in-depth monologue from you there.
Well, I've still got a lot to say though.
I'll relax. I'll sit back.
So, and it's set in the chapters are there are 26 chapters. There, it always begins with one letter and an image of the chapter. I love that. So it's a big homage to not exactly literature, I would say, but more to fairy tales and to Grimm and all those kind of things. But I want to focus on what happens. I want to skip ahead a bit. So if you know the film, it's pretty much what happens in the book. He goes to find the solution for nothingness, and he doesn't really find anything. That's the problem. He just goes from one thing to the next. But it's intuition. The book is about intuition. And the medallion the princess gave to him kind of guides him, and he feels where to go. And he meets a Fuhua, the luck dragon. So he finds a dragon that brings him luck. So there are many things that kind of guide him and that bring him to the right direction. But he also, there are also some mishaps, and he actually starts in, at one point, I think, was a financial thing. He goes to Spook Town, which is literally just a town filled up with all the horrors of Phantasia. And it becomes interesting because Phantasia is really, it's a world where people's imagination, dreams, and projections are kind of thrown into this world. So whatever fears you have, for example, all goes to this one town, Spook Town. And so it gets lost in actual people's fears and everything. But to skip ahead, Dean, I just want to mention that the second half of the book, the film ends with the first half of the book. And it kind of gives a nice ending there where the boy, he basically, this is a slight spoiler, I have to say this, but the boy from the real world starts realizing that he's mentioned in the book and that he's asked by Phantasia to maybe intervene and to try and save them because they think only the boy, a real boy, can save the world. Because what they need is a new name for the princess. They need new names. They need new ideas. The reason why Phantasia is dying is because fantasy, imagination, and humanity is dying. Right. And if there's one thing that books can do, is he does tell stories to himself. And he does seem to have that one talent. So they feel that this boy could save Phantasia by giving new names. And this is the part where it becomes really interesting. When he is sucked into this universe, he saves the day in some sense. He saves the day by giving the princess a new name. It's kind of like a Deus Ex Machina almost, mm-hmm. because the solution at the end is so simple. He just gives her a new name and then the world is saved. And then it goes at that point, it's only like the 10th chapter. And it's really the end of the film. So I was wondering kind of, oh, what's going on? There's so much left in the book. And he asks, is this the end of the story? And she says, no, it's the beginning. Uh-huh. But the film ends there. The film doesn't continue with that because I think it's too crazy what happens. That it's way too, here it really goes over the top. He basically basically recreates a new Phantasia because what he has is he has the gift of a storyteller. And he starts just wishing away because he realized he gets the medallion himself mm-hmm. from the princess. But when he turns it around, he has the phrase, tu vas tu vids. And that's kind of hard to translate because it means two things in English. It means do what you want, or you can translate it as do what your will demands you to do. But he can
that's a very different statement.
And well, here's something interesting, Dean. I find this interesting because that's exactly one of the mistranslations you got from Nietzsche, because Nietzsche talks about in German, der Macht des Willens, which is the power of the will. That people have interpreted that as the will to power instead to do. So this is our translation. Mm. And that's why Nietzsche has been described as a Nazi philosopher. It wasn't. He's a vitalist, not at all a Nazi. He just talked about the power of decisions. So this does take a slight Nietzschean approach because Nietzsche even talks about, if you study Nietzsche, talks about the camel, the lion, and the child being the most powerful figure because the child is just creating everything from once. And this story is literally a novel about that, where he just recreates Phantasia. But the thing is, just because he can do what he wants and everything becomes fulfilled, that we're going back in a circle here. There are two types of tragedies in your life. One is you don't get what you want. One is you do get. The thing is, he gets what he wants and Phantasia becomes real twisted. And it comes at a price. It comes at a price every time he... Every time he wishes for something, he loses a part of himself and memory. So eventually he becomes lost in Phantasia and himself. And that's really twisted because he gets unconsciously lost in Phantasia.
So I need to warn you about spoilers, PJ. It sounds like we're going beyond the end of the film. We're going to the end of the book. We have an anti-spoiler policy on this show.
No, I know. Well,
imposed by your good self.
You're breaking the whole time, but that's it I want to say. I just want to say that it becomes so dark. My God, this is definitely not like your classic children's book. It's written beautifully. It's the concept, like that's just a snippet of it. The best part of the book are the last four chapters. That's like the most heartbreaking part, really. Chapters W to Z. that's where I feel like, and it twists again. It's like you think it goes a certain direction. At one point, I think it goes Lord of the Rings-esque, which is a very, very war scene. I think I don't want this right now. I didn't like that about Lord of the Rings. Yeah. I liked the philosophical part of Lord of the Rings, and thank God it changes again. And I just want to say there is one chapter in it which is about I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say like there are certain degrees of what you truly want. And when it goes towards the last wishes, there's one which is really heartbreaking, I say. And you might, if you guys read it, you'll see, yeah, that makes sense. If you read the beginning of the book, what he truly desires. And it's really heartbreaking, actually, the last few chapters. Extremely beautiful. It's got one of the best endings and one of the best finalizing chapters.
How long is the book in page count?
No, it's only about, it feels very long in some sense. And it took me a long time to read. It took me a good 3 weeks to read. It's only 400 pages.
Okay,
but I'd say it's pretty dense in philosophical content. In some sense, I feel like you need to read it slowly and digest it. Mm-hmm. And I just want to mention the scariest part of the book is not Spooktown. The scariest part of the book is Madtown, where people lose themselves. And that's similar as in Momo. I feel like if Momo is about the philosophy of time and about people losing time, this is about people losing their minds and imaginations and selling their souls. So there's like always these dark themes, Momo, but they're always fairy tale stories. But they're really relevant because just like we lose our sense of time and that we're giving away time. That's what Momo is all about. Here's like we're giving away our own imagination. We don't even have imaginations. Like we're disappearing really, or in our inner worlds. They're just like static. So I hope that wasn't too much of a monologue, but I just want to say, guys, one more time, this is one of the best books I've ever read in my life. Highly recommend it. I love Ende, and that's the end.
Good, that's the end. No, your enthusiasm doth show, good sir.
So that's all. That is literally the end of Ende. Well, not quite the end. It's unending, so it's not quite the end. But for the moment.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.